welcome to another episode of the Brothers Chat podcast. I am your host, Taiwo, and we're supposed to have a pretty full house this week, but a few people are late to the party. But I'll start with my partner in crime who makes up the Chelsea contingent. His name is Boaz. How are you holding up during these difficult times?
Yeah, I guess it doesn't compare to what's happening in Ukraine, but that seems to be the common stance.
Yeah, bro, we don't mention politics in this podcast, bro.
But I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Not bad. We have a man who you may have heard of on the good old FT. He is the prince of the Twitter spaces. I am, of course, talking about AK. Welcome.
How are you doing, Tyler?
I'm great, man. I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Good to be here, man. As always. A pleasure to join you guys.
Yeah, good to have you back. We have George, who joins us from the Scrubs and Scholars. Thank you for gracing us with your presence.
Yeah, man, it's a depressing one this week. I can't lie, all that energy I usually have is just
where's your vim, bro? Like, I didn't hear the bass in your voice. What's going on?
It's been wiped out of me. I can't lie. Like, top four's done. It's just been wiped out of me, man.
Hey, give me a cup so I can drink your tears, man. I'm here for it. But we're about to discuss another week of Premier League football as we are now at game week 29. We're going to talk about the Premier fixture of the weekend. I am, of course, talking about Manchester United v Spurs, which ended 3-2. Cristiano scoring and creating more history by scoring 807 career goals. You can also add in the most recognised by FIFA. Also, 59 hat-tricks as well. CR7 just doing CR7 things. Ronaldo restored to the lineup after missing the Manchester derby. Now, there's been a lot of criticism thrown at him in recent weeks, some warranted, some unwarranted. Did he remind us, AK, of why he still makes certain people's GOAT conversations?
Listen, first of all, I'd like to introduce myself as the biggest fan of the greatest footballer to ever live. Cristiano Ronaldo, 807 goals officially now. I'm saying all that chitty chatter, yappa yappa aside, he is officially the greatest goal scorer in however long football's been around. There's one name at the top and it says Cristiano Ronaldo. I just hope people understand that. Second of all, Ronaldo coming into the season, I expected a lot more from him. I expected him to be competing for top scorer. I expected him to be helping us maybe win something. But obviously, it's been a disappointing season for the whole football club. But I can never, ever sit here and say it was not worth the ride. To see him step out at Old Trafford against Newcastle and score a brace. I think I even spoke to you after that game, Tyler. It was one of the... I had goosebumps, you know what I'm saying? To see him step back out at Old Trafford was a moment in itself. Yeah. And now for him to get a hat-trick again, 12 years after his first one for Man United, is absolutely phenomenal, to be honest. The game aside, it's just Tottenham. We're supposed to beat them, you know what I'm saying? I don't care about the result. For me, it's about the brilliance of this man. And this whole week has been about just appreciating how good he has been over his career. And when he hangs his boot up, which he will hang his boots up soon, we will miss him. We will look back at it and think there's not many players that we have or we will ever see that can do what he does in front of goal. He's absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Steering away from Cristiano Ronaldo, what did you make of the Manchester United performance in general? Because I can't lie, I think it was pretty lackluster.
It was another shit performance, as we always do. Yeah, you know I'm saying shit performance, but the result was there. We were clinical in front of goals with the chances that we got, and yeah, there wasn't a lot of chances, but the chances we did create, that we only created one clear cut chance that whole game, which was the one Ronaldo scored his second goal where Jadon Sancho played him through, who I may add also has been absolutely phenomenal over the last couple of months.
Yeah. He's
truly, truly coming into it. And hopefully he can continue that tonight in about 45 minutes against Atletico. But I really, really do hope they build on it, if that makes sense. Of course, yeah, it was a bad performance, but when you have a bad performance and you get the result, it boosts that morale. So going into today's game, I want to see something different. Going into next week's game, I want to see something different. And I need you guys to stay on that gas because top four is looking very, very, very long right now, but it's still very, very possible, if that makes sense. If you do your part, you can always rely on Arsenal to slip up, which they could. But at this moment, that performance was not good enough. But at the end of the day, football is a sport of results. And at this point in the season, the most important thing is to get those 3 points. And with the help of CR7, we managed to secure the 3 points.
100%, 100%. Jordan, we'll swing to your side because I know you have a lot to say.
I want George to tell me about that first goal because I still haven't got an answer from Tottenham fans. Where is the brains of backing away from Ronaldo on the edge of the box?
Do you know what? I was questioning that, but then I also thought, if you look at some of the earlier sequences, he was actually linking up very well with Jadon Sancho. So I didn't expect him to shoot from that distance, and he hasn't this season very often shot from that distance. So I think they was banking on him trying to maybe do a 1-2 and lay it off, but it was just one of those moments. I did look at it and I was thinking, Dyer, you shouldn't really be giving Ronaldo that much space. But, I mean, it's one of those things that just happen in the blink of an eye. And it was a beautiful goal, man. I can't lie, for me, that was a Ronaldo carry job. It literally was. Tottenham didn't play great. We dominated the game, but we didn't dominate in the final third. We didn't create enough chances. I think what United done well was they forced us out wide. You're very compact in the middle. And although he did score an own goal, a lot of people are criticising Maguire's performance. He didn't actually play too bad. He'd done the job of keeping Kane out of the box very well, him and Varane together. And they neutralised Kane. Kane didn't really create much, didn't have much time on the ball. And he didn't get in no goal-scoring positions. So on that front, he'd done his job. Overall for Tottenham, I was very frustrated. I was fuming after the game. I'm frustrated because time and time again, I ask these players to step up. The players tell themselves they need to step up, and then they don't step up. It's just not good enough. And Harry Kane has said, for me, Son, Benteke, they're some of our best players that we've got, and all three of them pretty much stunk it up. I think Son looked like he was trying a lot. I don't know what was wrong with the pitch on the weekend. I don't know if he's... Son slipped about 5-6 times.
Yep. Saw that.
I couldn't really make
it. It was only him slipping. That's what made it weird to me because I didn't see anyone else slipping and sliding. I don't think he had his long studs on, I'll be real.
Yeah, I don't know. He just slipping and sliding constantly, which wasn't a good look, especially when he was getting into good positions. And he just seems to me like he's lost sort of that. It's that clinical finish and that clinical moments where when you're in the final third, and you just see that corner of the goal. He seems to hesitate now, and he doesn't take that shot when we need him to. And we saw that one chance that we had was the best chance in the second half when it came to him on literally about 12, 13 yards out. He could have just laid it into the bottom corner and he put it wide. But yeah, man, very frustrating performance. I don't think United done well enough if Ronaldo didn't score those goals. But that header, it was just a classic Ronaldo, man. He towered over our defenders. They didn't do good enough. And defensive, I say lapses in concentration rather than defensive mistakes. But yeah, too many times we lacked concentration and they done really well. And he took his chances. But yeah, I did just want to highlight on the Man United side of things that Jadon Sancho, very, very well. Very good performance from him, especially over the last 5 to 6 games, I'd say. He's picking it up, sort of finding his feet in the Premier League. Something that I did expect at the start of the season. I did think he'd pick it up after a few months. And his link-up play was well with Ronaldo, so I expect to see more of that towards the end of the season. And a lot of people telling me that Ronaldo doesn't have link-up play or he can't link up with the team or he shouldn't start. I just prove him wrong yet again.
Yeah, 100%. Boaz, we'll try and get things from a more neutral perspective. From your standpoint, what did you think of the game from both sides, from a Manchester United side and a Tottenham side?
I think both teams kind of played quite poorly, if I had to be honest. It wasn't really a great game to watch. Maybe that's just my opinion. It just wasn't that fun. I'm not too sure why Matic was playing. Was it because McTominay was injured or?
Yeah, McTominay, I think he was ill. I think he might have had a muscular injury. I'm not too sure, obviously starting tonight, but I think he might have had a minor injury as well. So I think Ragnick said if he's not 100% fit, then there's no point in him starting. That's why I love Ragnick. He just says it how it is. But he wasn't fit, so Matic came in.
No, fair enough. I just think Ronaldo probably covered up the cracks for Man United. Man United played so appallingly, so poorly. But yeah, if it wasn't for Ronaldo, the game would have been completely different. He's definitely carrying your team to somewhere. I don't know where. But it'll be interesting to see whether he stays in the next season. I think Ragnick probably made quite an interesting decision to start him, given all the things which are happening in the press and the rumours which are happening in the Man United dressing room. But no, yeah, Tottenham are weird because, like, yeah, like, you never really know what sort of Tottenham are going to arrive on the pitch when the game starts. But yeah, it was an interesting game, but it wasn't too fun.
Yeah.
Now, I'll ask you, Tybal, what did you think of that Ballhead's performance? That his new trim, he come out, and I feel like he's escaped a lot of criticism. Mr. Nabil Pogba, they call him. What do you think of his performance as a United fan?
If you're talking about the game on Saturday specifically, I think it wasn't a good performance at all. Very lackadaisical on the ball, took too much time to make decisions, dispossessed way too easily. I can't lie, I think him cutting his hair took his powers, because I know a lot of Bruno stands were eulogising and saying that Bruno can do better. But no, it wasn't a great performance by his standards. But I don't know about Pogba. I don't think he's fit, you know. Like, every time I look at him, especially in the second half, he just looks so laboured. Like, he's lost a yard. He doesn't, like, you know how Pogba used to glide like a Rolls Royce? He doesn't do that anymore. So
he's lost a touch. You could tell he's lost a touch physically.
Yeah, and I think that might be attributed to a lot of injuries. Like, I can't remember the last time he went a full season without getting injured, and these aren't minor injuries. These are very, like, lengthy injuries.
Do you know what really pissed me off as well, though? It's the fact that his long passing has always been great and it always will be great. But well, another thing you can always rely on Pogba is those short passes. He has a very high success rate with them.
Yep.
That game, he kind of looked like Fred, bro. He couldn't get a four-yard pass away. It was so weird to me. I'm used to seeing Fred and McTominay getting the ball and misplacing a five-yard pass. But Paul Pogba did it all game. He couldn't do the simplest things. And it was so weird to me. The thing with Pogba is he's very talented. He's an incredible footballer, in my opinion. But there comes an end to every journey. And Paul Pogba's journey at Manchester United has come to an end. This club has failed him. He has failed this club in certain aspects. But I think, yeah, at the end of the day, I have no hard feelings towards him. I just think it's time for him to move on and find a new challenge. And I wish him nothing but success. I hope he does go on to win. He goes on to win the World Cup and he goes on to win Champions League, because that's the caliber of player he is. That's what he deserves. But his time at United is unfortunately over.
Okay, do you think that he has... he has the ability to go on like the likes of sort of Xabi Alonso, Cruz, Modric, to go on to their 35, 36, or do you think he'll start tailoring off a bit earlier in his career? Sort of.
I don't think he can play into his mid to late 30s. I think once he reaches 33, we will see a very big decline.
Yeah, I think I'm inclined to agree with AK.
I think that you're only going to get maybe maximum four more years of him being able to compete with the best amongst the best without looking out of place. After that, he will start to look out of place.
Yeah, definitely. I can't lie. I think Pogba should have left about 2 years ago, if I'm being completely honest. While I feel like his application, he should have showed more application on a consistent basis. I think more fans will be clamouring towards him if he works harder. While I agree he can do better for the team, realistically, I don't feel like the parameters of the club were put in place. And yeah, it didn't help him. But yeah, I can't lie. If he wants to have any sort of legacy, then yeah, he needs to leave. I can't lie. I think his time is done. But yeah, I'll go back to Cristiano Ronaldo. Boaz mentioned that he said he'd be surprised if he sees Ronaldo stay in another season. AK, would you keep him on for another season, or would you go all out for
I think we got what we wanted out of Ronaldo. In terms of, yes, I know he was expected to do a lot more, but as a fan, I got the moments that, and I can now cherish forever. I can say I was there against Villarreal at Old Trafford. I was there against Atlanta at Old Trafford when he did what he did. I watched him score a hat-trick. From a fan's perspective, I don't think Ronaldo can move us forward. I'll be very real with you. He's reached that, and it's not because he's a bad player or whatnot. It's just the age catches up to every man, and I think his age is slowly catching up to him. So I think, I believe personally, no matter what happens, we could go on to win the Champions League. I don't know. No matter what, Ronaldo will leave at the end of the season. I don't see him staying. And whoever's going to be the next manager to come in, Erik ten Hag, will have to go look for another option for striker, because we have one in house arrest who I don't ever want to see play for this football club again.
You don't talk about him, will you?
Yeah, and I honestly do say this. I hope he never plays for my football club again. We have Ronaldo, Cavani, who's done at the end of the season. Ronaldo, who will more than likely leave at the end of the season. So there, we do need to go out there and get some strikers. At the moment, I'm hearing it's going to be Isaac, which I'm not completely fond of, but it's looking like they already are looking for a striker. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I do think his time at United is over. I don't think he can take us to that next level. And he should bow out gracefully at the end of the season.
Yeah. I don't think you can be building your team around a 37-year-old striker. You mentioned Cavani as well. I almost forgot he played for our team. It's actually crazy. The guy,
that man has attended more boxing matches this season than matches actually played for
that guy has blood on his hands.
It's not even a joke. He's attended more boxing events than actual football matches.
What he's doing is absolutely criminal, and how he gets away with it, I do not know. But yeah, I'll get into another player because I know PR7 scored a spectacular hat-trick, but I would actually give the man of the match to Fred. I think he finally found his Brazilian passport.
I think his performance was so overrated. I didn't rate any of your midfielders' performance. I thought at times he did
Not from a defensive perspective, Joe, from a progressive and attacking perspective, Fred mm-hmm. was really good for us.
Yes, so that's what I was going to say. At times, I thought there was certain sequences in the game where you saw him do nice one-touch passes, one-twos with the likes of Ronaldo and Sancho on the counter, which helped you guys really well. I saw that quite a few times from the back of our corners. But from a defensive perspective, when we had the ball, I thought him, Matic and Pogba were horrible. And I saw especially toward the sort of the last 30 minutes, when we put the press on high, Højbjerg was dominating that midfield. Like, he was having a field day. As bad as Bentancur was playing, he's sort of losing the battles in midfield. Højbjerg was going out there, getting on the ball, making the passes we needed, spreading it out wide. I thought he was the man dominating that midfield. I couldn't really rate Fred Pogba's or Matic's performance, just because I thought where you guys were playing defensively the majority of the game, you wanted to see them shielding the defence a lot more. But we found ourselves not sort of breaking through the defence, but breaking through the midfield far too often.
I think as a collective, they may have been poor, but if you're looking at it from an individual standpoint, I think Fred had a really good game, at least by his standards anyway. But yeah, that's just my thoughts on that. But yeah, unless anyone has anything else to say, actually, Jordan, are you still confident Spurs are going to get top four?
No, I'm not. I can't. Just sort of very similar to what AK said. Right now, I think it's in Arsenal's hands, because the game in hand they got on top of us. I know the game in hand is against us, and that's still, and I think we're 5 or 6 points behind them. So right now it's in our hands to put the pressure on Arsenal and put the pressure on United. But for us to go out there and get top four with the amount of points we are behind and some of the games we still have to play, I just can't confidently say it anymore. And I think we're at the back of the line. So I don't think we'll get top four this year. I don't think we're going to get there. I think we're going to just about fall out, maybe 3 or 4 points behind.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the fixture. I'm just looking at the table now. We're even three games ahead of them, so it's kind of crazy. Okay, do you have similar thoughts or?
Yeah, it is Arsenal's to lose at this moment, but Arsenal do have a tendency to slip up here and there. So you just got to keep applying that pressure and wait for them to slip up. And I think they will slip up to the point where if anyone manages to keep up, they will give them a chance at least to do something. So you just got to make sure you win your games, worry about yourself, and let them do what they do. Because what Arsenal do best is give people opportunity. And when they do give you the opportunity, you just got to take it.
Yeah, what Arsenal games is that? What are Arsenal?
They're playing Liverpool tomorrow.
Then they've got Aston Villa, right?
Saturday. Yeah, their games in hand are Liverpool, Chelsea, and Tottenham.
Yeah,
on top of you guys.
Yeah.
So even that. That's what I mean. I feel like, but the advantage they have with that is that those are games in hand. So they can afford to lose them because they're still ahead of us with losing those games. So that's the position they're in, is that they need to go and get points from the other teams, which, if you look at over the past 10 games, I think they're unbeaten in. You can see that they can do that. And although I was of the thought that I think that they are, and I still do think the goals are going to dry up for them very slowly, and you might start seeing them battle out for 1-0s and 0-0s.
I just think that they're in the driving seat right now, and they're in such a good position that they have to wrap it up. And if they don't, it's a failure on their side.
Yeah, it's definitely theirs to lose.
100%.
But I'll get into the next fixture. We've got the West London Blues, who beat Newcastle in dramatic style as it ended 1-0 thanks to star boy Kai Havertz. Boaz, I'll ask you a question. Were Chelsea unlucky not to give away a penalty? Chalabar pulling down Jacob Murphy in the box.
I can see it being given. Yeah, I can see it being given.
You know, why would it not even go to VAR? Why do you think they opted not to?
That was crazy.
To VAR.
Didn't it go to VAR, but they said it wasn't a foul?
I don't think it didn't, unless I'm mistaken.
I just thought it was crazy.
It did go to VAR.
Oh, it did. Okay.
They deemed it not a penalty.
Yeah, crazy. That's even worse. Like, if it was outside the box, understandable, sort of pushing and tugging, like you do those things in football. But if you're in the box, and he was literally about to square that ball across the box, I don't know what player was waiting there near the penalty spot, but they had a clear shot at goal. That's got to be a penalty. That's a goal scoring position. He has to give that as a penalty. And it's crazy that they never. You can see Chalobah lunge his leg twice to take him out. So
the shirt pull as well. It wasn't just the leg lunching. But that was a clear penalty. Chelsea fans will tell you, anybody will tell you. You can go ask the referee to go have another look at it and he'll tell you that that was a penalty and they just got it wrong on the day. But that is the credit of football, man. You just keep jugging and sometimes results go your way, sometimes things go your way. But I want to speak about Kai Havertz, man.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about star boy Kai Havertz. He scored with a sublime touch and finish.
Phenomenal, man. He is phenomenal. I've been screaming for the longest. Kai Havertz is fucking incredible. Chelsea fans often get onto me when I praise him so much, but I watched him in the Bundesliga, and I know what he's capable of. There's only two players I'd say I've been angry in the last 5 years that they've gone to other teams, and that's Thomas Partey and Kai Havertz, because I really wanted both those players at United. I think they would have made perfect fit for us as well. So Kai Havertz, I know, is incredible. He hasn't shown it yet, 100%, but slowly, he's getting on form, and you're starting to see what he's really, really about. So
I think that's... Sorry.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, I think the reason why like Chelsea fans are a bit like, I guess, skeptical is we've seen what he's been able to do in the Bundesliga, and he just hasn't been able to do that since. Obviously, like, he steps up in the big games. Like,
we've seen hints of it, though. Exactly. That's what gives me the hope.
Yeah. And I think the stat is he scored the most goals under Tuchel while at Chelsea out of all other Chelsea players. He definitely has the capabilities, and you see that in moments. But like, I guess the issue is it's taken him some time to like actually be consistent. But he's shown it now on a more consistent basis. So I'm happy.
Is he slowly showing why Chelsea splashed out over 70 million of them? Because obviously he came with great fanfare. At least if you watch the Bundesliga, and if you see them, do you think he's slowly starting to show people why Chelsea invested so much time and money into him?
Yeah, I think so. And especially like on the backdrop of Lukaku's performances, he's definitely stepped up in a position which is, slightly different. He's performing goals. He's linking up play. Like, he's definitely important to the way Chelsea plays. I'll probably say like our best front three is probably with Havertz, Mount, and maybe a Pulisic.
It's crazy. Yeah. How you've got 100
Can I? What I want to say on the Kai Havertz, is, and I know it's controversial, but I'm keeping the same energy, I haven't seen more from Kai Havertz than I've seen of Dele Alli, and so I'm not going to believe the hype until he starts to show me more.
Do you want to say sure about that?
Yes, I'm very sure. He's literally a German Dele Alli that hasn't proved himself.
Has Dele Alli scored the Champions League final goal?
Okay, so if you want to do a singular game, goal makes a player better, then run that. But at the end of the day, what we know is that Kai Havertz was signed for 70 million the two seasons before he came. And this is the reason why we tax that league at 25%, because the two seasons before he came, he scored around 18 goals and then he scored around 10 or 12 or something like that. So pretty impressive numbers. And he was playing as a false nine, sometimes as a 10. very similar to what he's playing at Chelsea. His first season, I will give him a... I don't even want to give him a buy because really, he was signed for a lot of money. I know you guys were trying to find his position last year, didn't really know what would work best for him. The number 10, he had different managers. So I'll sort of allow him, look, the first year was the year to get used to. But this season, he's been playing quite consistently, especially with the problems with Lukaku being in and out of injury and just being dropped as of recently because he's not good enough. He's had more than enough time to start picking up more goals, being consistent in this team. And he's only got 6 Premier League goals. It's just not good enough. As I said, from Dele Alli, what I saw was... And the types of goals that he scores, it's not just from me just making a parallel because Dele Alli played for Tottenham. It's the types of goals that they score. They peel off the back defender. They take a little touch. They nibble it across the line in front of the goalkeeper. It looks nice. It looks good. But let's be real. Is it sustainable? I don't think so. I don't think playing him up top is sustainable. I don't think he's going to get you enough goals to start pushing on next season for a title. Or you're just not going to find yourself to work him in the team with another 2 players around him in a front three. I just don't think that if he's not in the middle, he's not going to work. So I personally just don't see enough in Kai Havertz, and I don't buy into the hype as of yet. Although I do think that he has talent. I'm just not going to buy into the hype until he does more than what I've seen from Dele Alli do at number 10, which was 15, 16 goals in the Premier League.
What's your thoughts, boys?
Yeah, I don't agree with that. Like, I think Havertz has proven that he has the capabilities, he has the skills. Yeah, obviously, it's taken him some time. He's obviously had his own issues adopting to the way, Chelsea play, how the Premier League is. Like, it's very different. It's definitely taken his time, but he's proven time and time and again, like, and I think you're basing it just on pure stats. I think if you actually watch the Chelsea game, you would actually see that he actually contributes a lot to the way Chelsea plays in terms of, like, just playmaking. Chelsea have very kind of, like, I think, poor execution of, like, final balls in the final third. But I think 2 players which will definitely do that for you is probably going to be Mount and Havertz. I definitely disagree that he's a Chelsea Dele Alli.
The relegation bully. Mm-hmm. The guy that's got 9 goals and assists out of 13 against Norwich and Watford.
Well, he gives you something different. I'm sorry, but like...
You have to look at the performances as opposed to the stats, obviously. Stats
are very important. Dele Alli.
Because Mason Mount is a GA guy. Let's be honest. You look at his performances in a lot of the games. As an attacker, he doesn't bring a lot to the game apart from a few missed chances.
You actually don't watch Chelsea?
I do watch Chelsea. He doesn't bring a lot to the game apart from a few missed chances. You might see him create a chance every now and then. He's not a good player. He runs around the pitch. He's a distance runner, and his best attributes are defensive. The reason I'm talking about his GA is because when you have 9 GA, literally 9 out of 13, that's almost 80% of your goal contributions have come against the 2 sides that are
73% to be exact.
All right, 73% that come against the 19th and 20th place teams. Of course, we're going to question that. You talk about him being one of the top performers for your team and one of the best midfielders for his age in the world. That's what people call him, one of the best youngsters around. That's horrible. He's a relegation bully. He's playing at championship level. And
if you actually watched him in the actual game, okay, cool. He does have GAs against lower positions. But, like, if you actually watch him in a game, he actually has so many key passes, key chances. And one of the prolific things of Chelsea is we actually just can't finish goals. Like, we have Werder and Lukaku, who are probably the worst finishers in the Premier League at this moment on form. And it's not because they don't have chances, because they're given chance upon chances due to the work of Mount or Jorginho, and they fluff them. The reason why we're talking about Werner and Lukaku fluffing chances is because chances are being created. Are we not?
I don't even think Lukaku fluffed chance. He just doesn't move.
Who fluffed the chances in the final?
That was Mount. But also, we're basing Mount in a position of a number 10 when he's actually number 8. But that's another conversation.
What do you think what's his position? Because obviously we mentioned number 9. I don't think that's going to be a long-term thing, obviously. I think it's just for the short and medium term. But where do you see him staking his claim in terms of position?
He's definitely like a number 8, and you can definitely see that from the fact of, his defensive capabilities and the fact that he can run is what makes him a very good number 8. I think under Tuchel and under Lampard, he's been put in this position of, number nine and number 10 and that playmaking role. And he can do that, but I just don't think that's his, like, is his bread and butter. Like, and you can see that from the fact that, yeah, he does fluff his chances when he's given them. And I don't think that's necessarily his fault. He's just in a position which isn't his. But that being said, we do have a lot of number eights. Like, if you think about, like, our current lineup with what, Jorginho, Kante, Kovacic, and even if you think about, yeah, the likes of Loftus-Cheek, Gallagher, who's on loan, Gilmore, to some extent in the future, we do have a lot of players that can play that number eight role. So yeah, Mount has a decision to make whether to improve his capabilities up in the final third or whether to really hone down his position in number eight.
Cool.
Unfortunately, lads, it is Champions League night and I need to go prepare. So I'm going to be leaving you lot here.
Yo, AK, before you go, give us a salute, man.
I'm not going to give you a sou because it's bad luck to do it before a game, but I am going to give you something else though. My voice on Saturday was gone because there's only one song that you sing after a Ronaldo hat-trick. And Taiwo, I know you sing this all the time, so please sing along with me. George, cover your ears because you're not going to like this one, my brother. Viva Ronaldo! Viva Ronaldo! Running down the wing, hey United sing! Viva Ronaldo! Hopefully we're going to be singing that in about 2 hours as well, man. Pleasure as always, lads. Thank you, Taiwo, for bringing me on. Boaz, nice to see you. Jordan, or George, I will see you around as always.
I will see you around, bro.
Take care, lads.
Okay, I'll see you on the other side, my friend.
All right, love.
We will move on that note to the next fixture, which was Arsenal-Leicester. 2-0 to Arsenal, courtesy of Partey and Lacazette with a rare goal. Jules, I'll come to you. Does Arteta finally deserve his flowers?
He's getting there. I can't lie. As one of his biggest criticisms, but I feel like the criticism that rival fans gives him is mainly because of what their own fans say about him and their own fans, the pressure that they put on him. So that's one thing I'd like to make clear, is a lot of the criticism that we give is mainly due to what the fans have said and the narrative that has been. But saying that, he's got the team playing very good football now. We can't deny that. They're sort of getting that sort of Wenger-esque back about them, where they're dominating games and they're dominating them well by taking complete control of the ball. They're passing it very well. You see even just the interplay between Odegaard and Saka on display in these recent games has been phenomenal. Like, we just can't lie. Odegaard is really starting to shine, come out as one of the only natural number 10s.
They're now saying there's more to number 10s, the golden assist. Can you believe that?
Yeah. No, literally. And I mean, he's the definition, I think, of number 10, of that sort of Ozil, Eriksen, those creators, those people that just come in your team, they sit in the pockets, they play those passes. It's very similar to what Bruno does, but I think what Odegaard does and what some of these other players do well is their efficiency in the passing and the passes that they choose. They pull them off and they choose the right passes and then they usually get them going well. And I think that they can control games a bit better by moving the ball around rather than just looking for a key pass constantly.
Yeah, I can't with you until you mentioned Bruno, man. I know it's...
it's just Bruno, like, you'll see him, like, he does make a lot of forward passes. And there's, of course, you need players in that team, but I think he does too much. Whereas Odegaard he'll move the ball side to side, wait for the right moment, and then find that right pass. And I think that's what he does so well. And that's why he's getting a lot of praise right now. Odegaard's really stepped up since last season because those first 6 months, Arsenal fans didn't want him. They were saying they wanted James Maddison. He was on the other side of the pitch. And James Maddison dropped a stinker. I was really upset with Leicester. I was fuming.
He's oblivious, man.
I just like you guys, I mean, I know all of us are watching Arsenal games now wanting them to lose because we need them. And Leicester just didn't turn up. Leicester weren't good enough. And Arsenal, they packed them in, man. Like, as soon as it hit 1-0 early in the game, I was like, yeah, this is game over. And I knew it.
I think it was like a 15-20 minute period where Arsenal were just all over them. And I was surprised it wasn't 2-3-4 come half time. I was very impressed with Arsenal. I can't lie, out of all the teams in the top six, I've probably been impressed with them the most.
yeah, I think Arteta's got them playing really well. I think it might just have been a case of him getting the players to implement his style, because you could see what he's trying to do from the early stages, but I think maybe he didn't necessarily have the players that were conducive to his style. But you can see that all the players are playing on the same hum sheet. So, yeah, I've been impressed.
The thing is with that is I do think that because he's been there so long, that's simply the reason why he, out of the top six, Arsenal are starting to shine now. It literally been 2 years. It took him 20 months to get this team playing good football. Because let's be real, prior to this season, they were horrible. They literally had games where they would keep the ball for a bit. I mean, then they couldn't get any shots. They had a lot of attacking problems. Then they had defensive problems. They were getting it wrong all across the pitch. And that's why they weren't really sure how to figure out. But Arteta's done his job. He's got the right players in. And yeah, I think the pressure is on Arsenal now. If they don't get top four, a lot of people will still call for his head. And rightly so, because he's in a position where they are so strong that they have to win. They have to finish top four.
Yeah, sorry, John. I was going to ask you, do you think it'd be considered a failure if he doesn't get top four? Now, considering if you were to ask opposition fans, and even Arsenal fans for that matter, where they'd finish the season, I think a lot of them would have said fifth or sixth would be considered a decent season. So would you still consider it?
So I was speaking to fans today earlier, literally about this exact topic. And Arsenal fans, very strangely enough, were saying that although that they predicted prior to the season that they were not going to get top four, they always expect top four. And because of the club that they are, getting top four isn't an overachievement. It's okay and they accept it, but it's not a success in so much in their eyes. I hear what they're saying, but for me, looking at it from an outside point of view, I'll say it very much is a successful season, considering they've been I'm sure this is their sixth season in total without Champions League. It may be their fifth.
Yeah.
I think it's 6 years, fifth season without Champions League football. This is second season finishing outside of Europe. So considering that, it's very much a very successful season for them because they spent a lot of money. It was a big risk going into the season. They had a lot of young players and it's paid off and they can only build from it. Finishing fourth, finishing third don't really make a difference, but getting Champions League spots is so important. So it's definitely a successful season for them, because if we was in that position as Tottenham, I'd be telling people this is a very successful season considering where we started. So for them, I've got to say it's very good.
Boaz, what are your feelings on Arsenal these days?
They're actually playing pretty decently.
You almost said that begrudgingly.
Because like, you know me, I'm usually saying negative things about Arsenal. Odegaard, that guy's a baller. Like, his play, his setup play, his vision, and the way he's linking up with, like Saka and the likes, I'm liking what I'm seeing, and I hate to say that as a Chelsea fan. Arsenal are ticking well. Like, you can see when they play football, they're playing for each other, they're playing for the manager. Arsenal have exercised patience, the fans and the board in the way Arteta has set up, and I think it's proved dividends. Obviously, there's going to be times where it doesn't quite work out in a game, but I think overall they're moving in the right direction. They're fairly consistent. They're definitely, I think, challenging for the top four position. And I'm not going to lie, if you asked a lot of fans, Arsenal fans and the like, a couple of months ago, no one would have thought they would be in the running. I think even if Arteta doesn't get a top four finish this season, which is, I think, quite unlikely, I don't even think that'll be a failure, because I think he's actually been successful this season given the whole context.
Which, and I'll ask George this question as well. What Arsenal player has impressed you the most during this resurgence?
I'd like to say one player, but it's so hard to just say one because those youngsters, that front four, Odegaard, ESR, Martinelli and Saka, they're literally they're all 20, 21 and 22. Yeah. They've all been phenomenal. They've all been so good. I'd say Odegaard's sort of the non-GA. I'd say that if your eye test,
then you know Odegaard's a player. You just got to watch him to see him. Some of the other players, of course, you can look at their stats and let their stats back up how good they've been. Saka, I think he's got like 9 goals. ESR, their top goal scorer. He isn't even a starter. ESR gets benched from Martinelli in enough most games, which is crazy enough. So it's hard to put it to one player when you have just such good of a four. But if I had to give it to one, I'd give it to Odegaard just because he's the mainstay in that team no matter what. And in that middle, he has a big job on his hands and he's really stepped it up.
Yeah, like you said, if you're a fan of the eye test, he's the person you want to watch. He's just so aesthetically pleasing on the eye. And he's just that nucleus in their midfield. Buzz, who stands out for you?
Yeah, like I would probably put it down to Odegaard if I had to choose one player. But yeah, like George is right. Like I think there are a lot of honourable mentions in that kind of final third for Arsenal. Like I think Saka is probably playing the best football I've seen him play for a while.
Scoring a lot of goals as well.
Pardon?
I said scoring a lot of goals. He's finishing. Yeah. He's gotten better as well. I think
his finishing's improved a lot.
Yeah, if you could attribute one thing to Saka, it was his finishing, but he's improved exponentially.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, like, it's not even just like lame goals. Like, these are pretty like top-notch goals, in my opinion. And obviously, yeah, like, Saka's always been that sort of player that has carried Arsenal on his back. I'm surprised he doesn't have back injuries, but he stayed with that, and yeah, like he's linking up well with Odegaard. So I'll probably say like those two players like probably stand out for me in the Arsenal lineup. Even Ramsdale is actually playing pretty decently for Arsenal.
Yep, Ramsdale. I had a lot of critique for Ramsdale at the beginning of the season. It's been on previous podcasts.
I remember that episode. We were laughing. laughing together.
Yeah, we did the transfer.
Yeah.
We were all laughing at it. Like, why
he's probably been one of the best goalkeepers this season. Like, he's up there in the top three, top four goalkeepers so far. Like, he's been really well.
I just didn't know his distribution was that good. I don't know if I didn't watch Bournemouth and Sheffield United properly, but his distribution is
his distribution and his reflexes are really good. His reflexes, he's got a good reflex save on him. And one thing I would say about Arsenal is it's dangerous how good the youngsters have improved since last season. Like the trajectory of their improvement over just 1 year, it is scary to think how good they can continue to improve. They continue to improve at this rate anyway. Odegaard, Saka, ESR and Martinelli, all of them, it's going to be dangerous because these, unless other teams pick them up, what I've been saying is I still predict that a top club will come in for one or two of them. One of the clubs you can't say no to in Europe, maybe not in probably 2-3 years time, probably will be. But until then, it is scary to see what they can do because those youngsters are dangerous, man.
Yeah. Final question. And Jules, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but you did say this off air. Where do you think Arsenal finishing?
Do you know what it is? I'd like to say I think they're going to get fourth, but it's so hard to predict. If I'm being sensibly and being objective, I think they're going to get fourth because the pressure's on them. I think they're in such a good position. But from my Tottenham side of things and from where George J4 is thinking, I'm thinking they're going to bottle it to fifth. I don't think that we're going to finish above them. I think it'll be West Ham or United if they do bottle it to fifth. But yeah, I'm hoping. I'd say more hoping that they bottle it to fifth.
So Jordan is saying
the objective side of things. I'm saying
J5 is saying that they bottle it and Tottenham claim fourth.
Not Tottenham, but maybe United. I'm not putting Tottenham in this top four conversation until we can get 3-4 wins in a row. Until I see that, we're not getting top four, man.
So still keeping it somewhat objective. I've got to respect that. Boaz, I'll get a more neutral opinion. Where do you think Arsenal finishing?
Yeah, like that final fourth position is probably going to be like the highly contested position. It's out of Arsenal, Man United, Tottenham. I'm not going to lie, the Man United team, there's nothing in that team that gives me any sort of confidence that you'll get a top four finish. You might have beat Tottenham, but that just covers over the cracks that is at Man United, which has been there for a number of years. Tottenham, it's just very inconsistent. One game, yeah, like they look good. Another game, they look like they're fighting for relegation. dramatic, I know, but like I'm just not convinced that like they can consistently turn out wins. And I think in a competition where yeah, like it's all about points, you just need, even if you're not playing well, you need those points. So for that reason, I would probably say Arsenal get that fourth position.
Yeah, I think Arsenal won what, 5-6 games in a row already. They're on a 6-game stretch, so they're definitely the most consistent team. So it's hard to look past them, at least at this point in time. But we'll move a little bit higher up the table. It was Brighton v Liverpool, which ended 2-0. Guys, how impressed have you been with another player, Luis Diaz, since his inclusion into the starting 11? Because I can't lie, I didn't expect him to be integrated so quickly. But since he's come in, I've been really impressed with what he's done.
It seems like he's been there for like years. He's jumped in and I think he's created like such a good bond with with like that front three of Mane and Salah. Like he can do it all. He can run with the ball, dribble, lay off balls. I think there are some maybe questions to be asked about like some of his decision making from time to time, but you could say that about anyone in that front three of Liverpool. That's not like to discredit them. They're still amazing what they do, but they could probably like beat teams 6-7-0 if they kind of thought a bit more outside the box. But back to the question at hand, yeah, like Diaz is probably one of the best signings that Liverpool have had for a while. Just in the fact that he's come into this team and just gelled so naturally.
Yeah. Jules, have you been equally impressed?
I'm not surprised. I'm really not surprised. He said,
that's going to be your guy, man.
Yeah. Literally, when Tottenham was in for him, you know me, I done my heavy research. I heard we're getting a big player. Mm-hmm. I do that research properly and good. And I'm not surprised at all. The way that he plays, the directness of his game, you can see Klopp has literally got him doing what Mane's job is on that left-hand side. And him interchanging with those three, with the other two, it just works so well. The one thing about him is... I don't know what this no-look rubbish is. Like, I think Klopp is going to have to get that out of his game quick. Bad habit. It's something... We like the flashy side of football, but it's a bad habit to constantly be doing that no-look pass. I think it's a bit too much. But very, very good player. I think he's going to be one of the best wingers in the league. And you will see that next season, I reckon, just how quick he will start firing. And just on the actual game, his goal... did you guys see? I think the keeper should have got a red card for that. Sure,
100%, bro. He clotheslined him.
Yeah, literally, and he kicked him high foot.
Yeah,
foot in the face. There were so many things wrong with that.
It was very brave of Luis Diaz to put. It's very brave of Luis Diaz to put himself on a line like that. But
100%. But that was just disgusting. Like, I'm disgusted.
Did he even get a card for that? Did he?
He didn't get a card at all. I think because it went in and it was a goal, they sort of thought, oh, we can't give the ref. But I'm not being funny. Rules are rules. Yeah. And if that was outside the box and someone done a high foot like that, you're giving it as a red card that studs in the face. It's disgusting. We have to keep the same energy. He's literally through on goal, whether he scored or not. Had to be a red card, man. And I just think this VAR and these referees in England, they're just not good enough. We need to have a massive overhaul of it. Because how can we have VAR come in and the decisions aren't getting any better? They're getting worse, if not anything, because we're highlighting them so much and we're seeing some of the worst decisions go to VAR and still get denied. It makes no sense.
100%. Do you share similar sentiments, bro? I mean, the Sanchez challenge on Diaz left a lot to be desired.
I'm actually quite disappointed with like the refing standard in the league at the moment. I think so many questions are being asked, and you would think with VAR, with the amount of cameras that you have in a stadium, you should be correcting these. Like, these are pretty clear and obvious fouls which are not being picked up on. So it's actually quite appalling.
They even got the 8K cameras now. You've seen they've got the 8K on the sideline.
It's quite 8K.
You can't even hide from the lights no more. So how are they getting it so bad? But yeah, I think the standing officiating has been bad for a very long time. But yeah, like we mentioned, it seems to be getting worse, and something, if not a massive overhaul, serious discussions need to be had because it's becoming very, very consistent. But yeah, guys, obviously we have the match tomorrow, or this will come out tomorrow, so I'll say today or tonight. Arsenal, Liverpool. How do you envision that game going? Obviously, Arsenal, the informed team. Liverpool, while they're getting results, their performances have been lacking. So, how do you see the game going?
Licks. Absolute licks for Arsenal, I'm telling you. And this isn't just me being biased. It's not me being biased. It's simply because we saw City drop points yesterday. We saw them go to Palace away and just do what they do. Like they do against Tottenham, they do against Palace. They just bottle it. I don't know why. Every season Pep's been there. It's just been a problem, but they've done it. And I saw City fans pre-game saying it. And now that they've done that, they've bottled the lead. They had a 14-point lead just 2 months ago. It's now 4 points with a game in hand for Liverpool. They're not wasting that game in hand. Let's get something straight. They're going to put the pressure on. And just like in November or whenever it was and they beat them, was it 4-0, 5-0, whatever it was. I just know it was a high score line. It's going to be the same thing over again. Whether it's at the Emirates or not, doesn't faze me. I think they're going to win 3-0, 3-1 easily.
Licks from Jordan. Boaz, do you feel the same way or are you feeling differently?
I definitely think Liverpool will win. I think this will be a reality check for Arsenal and Arsenal fans. I don't necessarily think it'll be a thrashing, but I think Liverpool will convincingly win.
Yeah, not convincing victory.
What do you think, Tao? Do you think that if they'll win? Do you think they'll win first?
What do I think if Arsenal win?
Do you think Liverpool win? Sorry, first.
I think Liverpool will win, but I don't think it'll be a convincing win.
Okay, and then my next question is, if they win, do you think that they have the minerals to keep up the pressure on City and eventually even take them to the last day or something like that?
I don't think so, just for the simple fact that I don't think they have enough defensive stability, because I watch certain Liverpool games and they look like basketball games, man. It's literally you have a shot, I have a shot. Like, obviously, Liverpool are notorious for playing that high line, but I just don't feel as if that's very sustainable. I feel like you have to throw somewhat of solidity, especially when you're going for a league title. So I'm going to put the edge towards City. I think it's very marginal, so I'd say at least 60-40 on City side. But, yeah.
But it's still a title race.
It's definitely a title race. It's like, obviously, if they win their game in hand, then it's 1 point or 2 points. So,
yeah,
definitely going to go down to the wire. But I think City will just shade it. Yeah, that's where I stand on that.
But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think Champions League will play a big factor into that.
100%, 100%. And I expect City to go down to the last stage of the Champions League. So, Liverpool as well. So, it'll be very interesting to see which team reacts and how it affects them in the long run. But, yeah, I'll go... that'll be a smooth transition into the next game, which was obviously the aforementioned game between Palace and Manchester City. It was a frustrating night for City, a 0-0 draw. Before we get into the analytics, was Pep not allowed to make substitutions? How do you not make a single sub in 90 minutes of football?
Isn't it the same thing for Solskjaer as well?
Hmm?
Wasn't it the same on the Solskjaer as well?
Yeah, I don't think Solskjaer's got the same stock, though, bro.
Europa League final, I remember that.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
We don't remember that. That's almost a year ago.
That's history, bro. Come on.
Do you know what is? I've seen Pep do this a lot of times, actually. It's not that he doesn't... I've seen him make very, very late subs, like he's just wasting the substitutions or to waste time. But I think it's because he's so confident in his team and he can see that his team's playing well and they're creating chances. But I think he lacks at times where he doesn't think that, oh, let me just inject something different into this team and bring someone else on that can change the game and bring a different dynamic. But he's so rigid in his system that he wants the players to play a specific way. And when they're playing that way and they're playing good, he doesn't want to mess it up. So that's why I think he didn't go no subs. But I do think it was a mistake. I'm not being funny. With the quality that City have on the bench, they have a lot of game changers and a lot of players that can come on and give you an individual moment of magic that can score a goal. I don't know why he didn't make the change. I was watching the game and I was just sitting there scratching my head because Palace had certain times you thought they could have scored as well. Yeah. And if they did, it would have been a big loss for them. So I think Pep lacked, but as I said, I don't know why. I don't know if it's something in the, I think it's one of those things in the City players' head where you just have those bogey teams. Very similar to with Tottenham. I think they have it with Palace. They just have it with Palace and Tottenham. I don't know why. But every time they play us and they play them, they just don't turn up. And or they, even if they play good, they just don't finish.
Yeah, I think in regards to substitutions, like, I agree with you to a certain degree, but while you may feel that your players are playing good, if you're not able to break down a stubborn Palace team, then I think you're required to make changes. Obviously, you had Gundogan on the bench, Sterling, Jesus on the bench, who, like you said, are capable of being game changers and changing the game. So, yeah, it's not as if City won a comfortable position. He needed to win the game. So, I think when you're in situations like that, to not even make at least one substitution is a bit arrogant, if I'm being completely honest.
But then what if you make a substitution and then, yeah, you lose that balance, you lose that stability, for example, like defending, and then you concede a goal? And what then?
No, I get that. And hindsight is a wonderful thing. But I feel as if you're not getting the... If you're not necessarily
the best managers take risks. I think that's the way you got to see. You got to take that risk. And I'm not being funny. He knows it's City. They have. It's not like they can bring on a player that's going to make the team worse. As in player for player, that player is going to come on and be worse than anyone on the pitch. As you said, you have Gundogan, one of the best centre mids in the league, on the bench. He has Gabriel Jesus, which is their only striker, a player that scores goals on the bench. Raheem Sterling, one of their best goal scorers, I'm pretty sure over the past 5-6 years since he's been there, one of the highest goal scorers for City. So they've got players that can come on and do that. So I don't feel like there's any player that can come on. And if that ever was the case, you would never be able to blame it on Pep, because that player is a game changer ultimately.
Yeah, I just think Guardiola is quite a... I think overall, he's quite a risk-averse person. I think he likes balance. He doesn't want to... yeah, like jeopardize the team for the sake of a goal. And I think the way he looks at his team is the team he starts is the most balanced Man City team I've got. He can create chances, but also defend a goal. And I think if you look at Crystal Palace are quite lethal, especially when they have the chance on the counter. So I definitely get it. I definitely think that, yeah, he definitely has players on that bench that can score goals and create chances. But I also get why he didn't make that change.
Yeah. Also, one player that has blood on his hands, Bernardo Silva, culpable, 2 gilt-edged chances. Kevin De Bruyne also culpable, but yeah, Bernardo Silva should be putting at least one of those 2 chances away. So
I was very surprised at the first chance. It was a heavy touch. Mm-hmm. I didn't get why he was taking a touch in the first place, but I could see what he was doing. But it was still weird. Like, it's one of those things where you can understand where he was coming from, but it was a stupid decision and he should have just shot. So I think, yeah, no, I have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, if your name's Bernardo Silva, I think you're scoring a goal, if I'm being honest. But yeah. Yeah, unless we have anything more to say on Manchester City, I think we'll go straight into the player of the week. I've already made my pick. Hey, look, I haven't even said the name yet, bro.
Yeah, PR7.
Bro, I was going to say you passed to Frederick, bro.
No way.
Oh, man. No, I'm joking. I have to go PR7, man. Come on.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. It's got to be PR7, man. Very amazing big performance.
It's very big of you, man. Boaz?
Yeah, like, he was... the only player on that pitch that performed well, so.
Yep. What about flop of the week?
Flop? This one's actually a good one. I think... you know who actually... I'm going to give it to Soyuncu. I don't know if you guys saw what he done to give away the penalty against Arsenal. It was just the dumbest handball I've seen in my life. It's got to go to him. I don't know how to explain it.
More stupid, dumber than Telus's?
What was that, sorry?
I said dumber than Telus's.
Yeah. Yeah. The Telus one was a bit strange, but I mean, we shot. With the one with Soyuncu, like, the ball was floating in the air and it's like he put his hand out for it a little bit, like, and it wasn't going in. That's the really strange thing. It wasn't going in, so I've got to go flop for him.
Yeah. First shout. Soon-Shu. Boaz, who are you going for?
I think that's a hard one because I can't really think of many flops. Yeah, I can't disagree with that, to be fair. It was a weird challenge. And yeah, terrible in the bad.
Can I just ask a question? Why can't Leicester defend corners? Why is it every corner I see them concede, it results in a goal?
Well, Leicester?
Yeah.
They just don't stay awake.
It's just terrible, man. It's
like simple defending on a set piece, they can't do, in my personal opinion. Because it was the same in the other Arsenal fixture.
Yeah. It seems to be getting worse and worse.
Yeah, I saw a stat for Arsenal saying they haven't conceded a corner all season, so... For them, they but Leicester, just like Tottenham, we're shit, man. We can't defend corners.
All right. I think we'll wrap this one up. Don't forget to follow us on all the socials. That's at The Brothers Chat on Twitter and Instagram. And you can also find us on Apple and Spotify, where you'll be able to listen to all our unpopular opinions. And don't forget to click on that subscribe button while you're there. Guys, I can't lie, I'm... getting a little bit tense. I just saw a chance. So I'm going to jump out and get myself into this Manchester United game. But yeah, thank you for joining me, man. We'll catch you
again. It was a good one. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
No worries.
Take it easy.
Nice, guys. Catch you later.
Cool.